Good afternoon. My name is Carlos Pascual. I'm one of the vice presidents of the Brookings Institution. I'm the director of the Foreign Policy Studies here. And it's a great pleasure to welcome you to this discussion with President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan on governance, growth, and development in Afghanistan. I very much want to thank my colleagues at the Brookings Institution who have worked very hard with the embassy in Afghanistan to put this event together in a short period of time. My colleagues at the 21st Century Defense Initiative on the Center of U.S. and Europe and at the Saban Center, thank you very much for all the work that you put into this. In addition to welcoming President Karzai, let me welcome as well his ambassador to the United States, Saeed Jawad, as well as many of the distinguished members of his cabinet. I'm not going to try to name all of them, but we have quite a number of them with us today. The challenges that are faced by Afghanistan could not be more critical for the United States, for the international community, for South and Central Asia, and obviously and most poignantly for the people of Afghanistan. At stake is whether the international community, operating under a UN mandate, working with every country of NATO and 40 international partners, can join in an effective partnership to help a nation to Afghan democracy establish itself as a viable and stable democracy. The answer to this question must be yes, because the alternative is to acknowledge that the forces of extremism and terrorism can undermine the efforts of the Afghan people and the international community. President Karzai has headed his country since appointed interim president in 2002, elected in 2004, and now comes to Washington in the advent of another presidential election in August. Not the least of his challenges will be ensuring, with the help of the international community, the security and stability of the country and all the candidates. It is a dangerous moment, but one filled with anticipation. The Afghan people have seen a glimpse of what a better future can be, with 6 million children in school, including 2 million of them girls, an economy that has grown 10% a year in aggregate terms, with basic health care coverage starting to reach most of the country, with mobile telecoms starting to connect the Afghan people. And yet, there are challenges ahead to establish security, to give Afghans an alternative to the narcotics trade, to fight corruption, to find a stable coexistence with Afghanistan's neighbors, to unleash the entrepreneurial potential of the Afghan people. It will be a test of leadership, skill, and determination. President Karzai, we commend your commitment to sustaining a democratic course to chart this path forward. We proudly welcome you to the Brookings Institution and look forward to your comments on a strategy for Afghanistan, for its people, and a partnership with the international community. Welcome to Brookings.
Thank you. I have a little note here. Let me put in front of me. Tashakkur, tashakkur. Milazimnes. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very, very happy to be at the Brookings Institute. Thank you for giving me this honor of presence before you today in a very important time for Afghanistan and for partner the United States of America in Afghanistan. We are not only going to elections in 3 months' time, we are also going to the next step in Afghanistan towards stability, towards institutionalizing our democratic gains, and towards a firmer, stronger partnership with the international community, in particular with the United States. I would like to start from today, but I can't unless I go a little to the past. Going a little to the past would start us with 7 years ago. And the enthusiasm with which the Afghan people participated in the fight against terrorism, against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda for their liberation. That fight succeeded immediately. Immediately means in a month and a half once it began, because the rest of the world stood with us, because the United States in particular stood with the Afghan people and arrived on the scene, and that partnership, that joining hands together enabled us to free ourselves from the grips of terrorism and the tyranny of oppression and obscurantism in less than a month and a half. And then we began our journey, the journey that had great pluses for the Afghan people, achievements for the Afghan people, notably the health service, the education, the highways, the roads, the economy, the higher education, the fact that Afghanistan became once again the home for all Afghans, democracy, institution building, the return of women in Afghanistan back to the workforce, to life in politics, in economy, in the society. I was pleasantly surprised. I'm not going to talk about health, and you know all about that. I'm also not going to talk about the percentage of women in the parliament. You know about that. But I'll talk about things that you have not heard about yet. I was very pleasantly surprised about 2.5-3 months ago when I attended a meeting with the Afghans who had returned from their higher education from abroad. I met with a group of 80 of them, engineers, doctors of medicine, medical sciences, biologists, physicists, agricultural experts, bioengineers, who had in the past 7 years gotten the opportunity to finish their graduate studies and then come to America, or to France, or to Germany, the majority to India, to Pakistan, to Iran, and other countries to do their postgraduate studies, and some of them to gain their doctorates from Japan as well as from China, and return to universities in Afghanistan. The pleasant thing was that there were 80 from a group of 350 Afghans who were currently studying in the high education, gaining higher education in our friendly countries. That was a great thing for us. And the greatest of all was when I learned about 3 weeks ago from our Minister of Higher Education that Afghanistan doesn't have 45,000 students in universities, that Afghanistan has admitted this year alone 45,000 students in higher institutions of learning, universities, mostly government universities, that in 2002 and 3 we had only 4,000 to 5,000 students in the universities, most of them men, boys, that today we have 75,000 students in our universities, both government and private, public or private, and private as you call them in the United States, of which more than 35% are women. And of which in the past 3-4 years, the highest marks earner, the highest qualifier, either the first or the second or the third of all the thousands of students are women. That is a tremendous achievement, and that achievement could not have been there without the help that was provided by your taxpayers in Afghanistan. Now, what is the road forward? Where do we want to be in Afghanistan as we go into the next elections and look forward to the next 5 or 10 or 15 years? Afghanistan wants to continue the journey it has begun, of building democratic institutions, of building a country that has a better standard of living, where not only we save 85,000 lives of infants and children per year, but where we build ourselves into a country that's counted as the first world. Are those terms still in vogue, the first world and the second world and the third world, or have they gone away now?
Pretty much
in vogue? Right, so we want to be the first world. And how do we want to be the first world? By educating ourselves to the standards of the first world, by providing a healthcare service to the standards of the first world. I mean, with differences, where I would prefer the British system there than the one you have here when it comes to health service. By acquiring the ability to defend our country, by acquiring the ability to produce of our own, by generating electricity to all of the people in the country, by providing power to the population, by providing road and access to the population, by connecting the country fully with each other and with the rest of the world. Part of this has been achieved. Part of this is still on the way. We've completed the ring road in the country. We have linked many parts of the country in the districts to the provinces. We've linked fully to the neighbors of Afghanistan. We have raised the income per capita from $150 a month of 2004 to over $450 today. We have raised our national reserves, foreign reserves, from 120 or 60 millions of 2002 to 3.6 billions of today in our national reserves. We have done all of that. But Afghanistan still remains to be the poorest country in the world. Afghanistan is still vulnerable to violence. Afghanistan is still dependent on the international community. The vision for Afghanistan 15 years from now is to be much less dependent on the international community. In other words, not to be a burden on you the way we are today. We will continue to be somehow in need of assistance from you 10, 15 years from now, but not to be a burden on you as we are today, but to be a partner with the international community in a more meaningful manner, where Afghan households, the most important of all, where Afghan households, when they go to bed at night, are sure that neither the Afghan government, nor somebody else, nor terrorists are going to be at their doorsteps to harass them or to take them away, that Afghan life returns to safety and security, the safety of life and the safety of environment, that Afghanistan's women, if they decide to go and work and educate themselves, have that opportunity, that Afghanistan's people are treated within their own country by their own doctors and are not going to Pakistan for treatment, or to India for treatment, or the richer ones to Europe and America for treatment, that Afghanistan provides for itself, that democracy is truly, firmly institutionalized, and that Afghanistan is seen by the rest of the world as a country where you can visit as tourists and not as aid workers or NGOs to help Afghanistan, but a country that you would want to enjoy to visit and take back memories from. An Afghanistan that would engage in the rest of the world in trade and business. An Afghanistan that would export to the rest of the world. An Afghanistan that would may not be producing Cadillacs or Jaguars, but Afghanistan that would be sending plenty of pomegranates to America. You don't need to grow pomegranates in California. You have them from Afghanistan. An Afghanistan that sends you the best carpets, an Afghanistan that also sends you perhaps young computer experts on a cheaper pay, an Afghanistan that you will see as rising as a country that presents its culture in the colors of its culture to you, an Afghanistan that you would not fear, an Afghanistan that you would like and love. An Afghanistan that will be safe for itself and safe for the rest of the world. How do we go there is the question. We have one element of that. in the strategy that was announced by President Obama, the AFPAC strategy, Afghanistan-Pakistan strategy, in fighting terrorism and in helping stabilize Afghanistan and, for that matter, as well, Pakistan. And what is the most important element in the strategy for Afghanistan in order for us to be sure that we are moving forward in the direction that we desire? One, the most important element in the strategy is the announcement of a civilian surge for Afghanistan. Civilian surge means sending your experts to Afghanistan to build Afghan capacity, to add to Afghan ability to produce and produce better, and to add to Afghan ability to produce better in agriculture and in water management and in all other areas of economic activity. But will the surge bring us that objective? And how is it going to bring us that objective? In our opinion, and in a few short words, it will bring us that objective. We will achieve it, provided the surge of civilians is done in accordance with the requirements of Afghanistan, with the plans of Afghanistan shared and supported by and agreed with by the United States, and in a manner that will add to Afghan capacity building. That 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when your experts go back home with a lot of gratitude from Afghans, they will have young Afghans trained in their place to take on and take the country forward. Second element of the strategy is military, the combating terrorism. Afghanistan will fully participate in this war against terrorism for its own survival and better future. But what is the most important thing needed in order to have Afghans go with it, as they did in 2002 and as they are doing today? It's to take the Afghan people into full confidence. It's to have the Afghan people trust in this war as one that is against terrorism and one that will eventually deliver Afghanistan out of its difficulties of violence into a safer and better future. And in that, the most important element is making sure absolutely that Afghans don't suffer the consequences of it as they do suffer today, that Afghan civilians are protected, that they see that this war is against terrorism and that it brings them safety and security, and that the Afghans see that their army is being trained in the process, that their police is being trained in the process, that Afghans see on a daily basis that with the surge, life improves, that with the surge, security improves, and that with the participation of the rest of the world, the Afghan army and the Afghan institutions providing security to our country are better and more enabled. In short, this strategy, as it envisages a better life for the Afghans and Pakistanis, and as it envisages the fight against terrorism, will get us where we want to be, provided we do what I described in simple words. Now, the future of Afghanistan in partnership with the United States and in the light of the strategy that we have described here will also require of the United States of America and our other partners to see Afghanistan also through the Afghan eyes. I've heard a lot of stereotypical remarks and views from America and the rest of the West on Afghanistan. I was reading yesterday about some dramas, some books written on which there were some plays in the UK on Afghan history, in which a woman says, God, peace be upon him. Now, this was written in that article, the widely off the mark understanding of Afghanistan was described in that article. A woman says, an Afghan woman in this play, God, peace be upon him. God doesn't need us to have call peace be upon him. It's for the Prophet Muhammad where we say the Prophet, peace be upon him. Now, if a writer on Afghanistan in London is so off the mark not to recognize where the Afghan religious sayings are, where the Afghan cultural values are, there are possibilities of mistaking, or misreading or misinterpreting Afghan culture or Afghan thinking. Afghans are requesting from our partners a respect for their culture, a respect for their history, and a respect that this is a country. Sometimes we find in the Western press that we are seen in the light of myths. Sometimes it's a utopian state of the highest beauty. Sometimes it's the what is that thing? Cedric Gates remarked, Valhalla. Valhalla.
Yes,
Valhalla. Now we are neither a utopian state of great beauty nor a Valhalla that we seek. We are a country like all other countries. We have a history of 5,000 years. We've done good things to ourselves and good things to others. We have done bad things to ourselves and bad things to others. We have been a prosperous country in the past. We've been a hungry country in the past. We've gone through starvations, through droughts. We've gone through plentitude. We have gone through sufferings. We are a nation that has emotions, that has a history, that has institutions, that has traditional institutions, that wants to be seen by the rest of the world, especially our allies, as an entity that has feelings and that is seeking a life that any human being would deserve. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, this war against terrorism will succeed only if we fight it from a higher platform of morality. Money can't buy you love, as you say it in America, no matter how much it is. And force won't buy you obedience, no matter how much it is. Therefore, we have to sit down and think of how we, in cooperation with each other, and in respect and understanding of each other, and in seeing the needs and the realities of a country, go forward towards a common objective. That common objective, that shared objective, can only be driven towards an accomplishment if we believe in it together. The Afghans began to believe in it with America and with the rest of the world. And the Afghans must be carried in that direction by reinforcing the belief that we have in the fight against terrorism and that the success that we will have for all of us together. So a higher moral platform. In other words, a moral platform is the sure way of defeating terrorism and taking Afghanistan to safety and security and the United States and the rest of the world as well. We're going to the Afghan elections very soon. The elections, as all other elections in the second elections in countries that have suffered, war-torn countries, will be controversial and difficult. For me, as the president of Afghanistan today, there will be no greater accomplishment. No greater accomplishment, but one in which I am either elected in a fair election or defeated in a fair election. Did I get it right? In which I am either elected in a fair election or defeated in a fair election. Elected in a fair election would mean that the man that has gone to the polling station and has voted knows that he or she has voted for me. And that can only happen if it is fair. And if the man and woman in Afghanistan that has gone to the polling station and has voted, but voted by coercion and force of the state institutions, or of the foreign prisons, or of the big guys in the country, or whatever else, and if I am declared the elected leader of the country the next day, the man or woman who has not voted for me out of a free choice will know that the person who voted for the president also had a free choice, so I will be considered legitimate. But if someone has voted for me out of coercion or force or intimidation, will know that I'm not their legitimate president, or for that matter, anybody else. And that's the day after which will have us troubles face troubles in the country. That is what we don't want. The future of Afghanistan really lies in a free election and fair election. The future of democracy lies there. I hope that the Afghan government, of which I've given the clearest possible instructions, and our partners in the international community will make sure that the Afghans go to a free and fair elections, which is the best and the only way of institutionalizing democracy. And in that regard, ladies and gentlemen, you are aware that I've chosen my running mates yesterday, as you call them in America, my two vice presidents. One is Marshall Fahim, that I learned yesterday in the Western press is liked very much, and the other is Mr. Khalili, who was my vice president for the past 5 years. Why have I taken this decision? As I mentioned earlier, in my 7 years of rule, I don't like this rule thing. What is the substitute to rule? Government?
Administration.
Administration, very good. In my 7 years of administration in the past 7 years, Afghanistan became the home for all Afghans. Communists returned, those who were with the Soviets. Mujahideen returned, those who had run away from the Taliban. By the way, both of them had run away from the Taliban, the communists and the Mujahideen. The millions of refugees returned to Afghanistan, women returned to Afghanistan, businessmen returned to Afghanistan, all the Afghan ethnic groups returned to Afghanistan. And Afghanistan, once again, so happily for me, became the home for all Afghans. Today in the parliament of Afghanistan, you have seculars, you have religious, you have women, you have men, you have former Mujahideen, you have former communists, you have business people, you have this people, you have that people, you have everybody there. But one thing that did not go well in Afghanistan, especially in the government, was the representation of those who had served Afghanistan so well by fighting the Soviets and the communists and the occupation of the former Soviet Union. Those were the Mujahideen. Because they were in school in early ages and they left school to fight the Soviets, they remained uneducated. So when we began our government in the name of reform and efficiency, and for reform and efficiency, we had to take many of them out and replace them with former communists and those who were working the former in the Soviet area because they were educated, especially in the police and in the military institutions. And that left a thinking in the country that those veterans of our war against the Soviets were not treated well. And that I want to correct. One reason. Second reason. The country needs to be united, and Fahim Khan will be a factor of stability and unity for the Afghan people. He will be a vice president that will be able to go to any part of the country and deliver. We need a man on whom we can rely in hard times. For a president, that is extremely important, and Fahim Khan will deliver that. And Fahim Khan has been one of those people who contributed immensely in the war against terrorism, shoulder to shoulder with the U.S. soldiers. in Afghanistan, in that we must recognize, and therefore for stability, for continuity, for taking the country forward in difficult times, we have decided to have him. It's good for us, it's good for America, and the Washington Post and New York Times should know that and begin to write well about him. Right. Now, there is one last thing that concerns partnership with America. We've had ups and downs, especially in the past year and a half, in our relations with America. There were difficult moments over civilian casualties between us. There were tense moments over the issues of aid distribution and corruption and all that. But ladies and gentlemen, through this forum, I would like to inform the American people that the fundamentals of this relationship are very, very strong. That even those Afghans who have suffered in accidents of casualties, when they come to complain to me, they ask me, when I say, what am I to do? They say, President, tell them not to do that, but we want their continued stay in Afghanistan. We want this partnership with them to continue into the future, and we are grateful for the help given to the Afghan people. The fundamentals of this relationship are very strong. Any future government in Afghanistan will be committed to this because the Afghan people want this partnership, and I want to reassure the American people that the Afghans are good partners, They recognize and appreciate the help you have given them, and they are strategic allies, and they want to continue in the strategic alliance, and the bonds are deeper and deeper because we have shed blood together, we have helped each other together, and we are on a journey together, and there will be ups and downs and bumps as we move along this rugged highway, which will have bumps and ups and downs, but the fundamentals are strong and steady, and the Afghans will continue this partnership, and that's also one of our election agendas, strengthened partnership with America, which means more money from America. Thank you very much. Over there. Thank you. Can I have it over? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's all right, doesn't matter.
Okay.
You want me to hide it? All right, I'll do that.
Okay.
In Afghanistan, you don't get thirsty. Here you do. Is it because of the air conditioning? I think so. We have opened the windows, and there's air and plenty of fresh air and
Birds chirping
and blossoms and...
I don't think the Secret Service will let us open the windows, Mr. President.
All right.
Mr. President, again, I want to thank you for coming to Brookings. For those of you who don't know me, I am Bruce Rydell. I'm a senior fellow in the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institute, and I also had the honor of chairing President Obama's strategic review of American policy towards Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Good, wonderful, great work.
That was announced at the end of March. Mm-hmm. What we're going to do for the next half an hour or so is have a dialogue. I'm going to take the prerogative of the chair to ask the first couple of questions and then open it up to the audience. And we hope we can have a give and take. I also want to thank you for bringing so many of my friends from the Afghan-Pakistan Review, who are all sitting here in the front row, and for their contributions. You talked about the journey that Afghanistan has taken over the last 7 years, and it's a very impressive journey. You mentioned in passing your neighbors, mm-hmm. and I'd like to ask you about your neighbors, starting with your neighbors to the east, Pakistan and India, mm-hmm. both of them. How would you characterize their role in this journey over the last 7 years? These are two countries with an intense rivalry. And how do you expect that relationship to move ahead in the future?
Very good. Should I be looking into your direction or in this direction? Well, this is a very, very important question, Ms. Rydell. Indeed, a question that has had the attention of Afghanistan and Pakistan and India and the United States with regard to the war on terror in a great deal. Pakistan is our neighbor, the closest of our neighbors. Pakistan is sharing a lot of history and blood relations with us. We are kin in many ways. Pakistan has looked after Afghans in a manner that no nation has ever looked after any other people in the history of mankind, to the extent that we know. We have been there 30 years, and 30 years we have lived as if we were the most honored of the Pakistanis, for which we are grateful. And we have the former Minister of Information of Pakistan, ma'am, sitting there with us. Thank you for that. We have also had differences of opinion with certain elements of the Pakistani policy for itself and for the region, for Afghanistan. We think that radicalism or the use of instruments of violence promoted by religious radicalism or through the use of religious radicalism is not going to serve any purpose. India has been a neighbor of Afghanistan, on the other side, a distant neighbor, an old friend of Afghanistan for many, many years, and especially India has contributed massively to Afghanistan in the past 7 years. It gives us 1,000 scholarships each year for Afghan graduates, 500 graduate and higher studies, 500 vocational trainings. We've had, as a result of that, in the past 5 years, hundreds of Afghans return to serve their country. India has contributed to the reconstruction of Afghanistan over $1 billion in significantly important projects in transmission lines for electricity, a very important road, the building of the building of the Afghan parliament, and all that, a very powerful relationship. Pakistan has contributed to the Afghan reconstruction by building roads in Afghanistan, by building kidney hospitals in Afghanistan. So relations with both countries are strong and fundamentally very, very important for Afghanistan and for the region. Pakistan has had a lot of influence in Afghanistan in the past 30 years because we were there as refugees, because we waged our jihad against the Soviets from Pakistan, because the Pakistani institutions, the ISI and the military and others, helped the Afghan Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. That brought Pakistan a lot of influence in Afghanistan. That influence had its pluses and minuses for Afghanistan and for the region. Pakistan is a rival with India, unfortunately, and they have issues with each other. So Pakistan does not like India's strong presence in Afghanistan, which is what we don't agree with. Our position is that Afghanistan is the closest neighbor of Pakistan, the closest brotherly, sisterly relationship with Pakistan. We are like conjoined twins. We're not separable. We are one. We are together. We will be living together. We will die together. But we will not die. We will continue living together. It's that important. But we also recognize that Pakistan understands that Afghanistan is a sovereign, independent country, and a very jealous country, by the way, when it comes to sovereignty and independence. Oh boy, we are a very jealous country when it comes to that. We love our independence like hell and our sovereignty, and we keep it so jealously. That's why we have fought everybody. The only friends that we have is America now. We fought the Soviets, we fought the British, we fought everybody else because we wanted to keep this sense that we are independent, our sovereignty. And for that reason, we are requesting our friends in Pakistan that we will have relations with India because we are sovereign, and we will have relations with India because it's in our interest. Mm-hmm. But our relations with India will never be against relations with Pakistan or at the expense of relations with Pakistan. It will be a contribution of relations to Pakistan. Having said that, for Pakistan, for Afghanistan, and for India, it's extremely important to join hands in the war against extremism and radicalism and the terrorism that it brings to our lives together. And we seek this partnership with America and Europe together, the three countries in the region. If we do it together, this menace will go away sooner rather than later.
Thank you for that. I can't help but ask one other question before I open it up, and that's your other neighbor to the west, Iran.
Your friend.
Our friend, which, as you know, a country which gets a lot of attention in this country. How do you feel Iran interacts with Afghanistan on the questions of stability and peace in the region?
Iran has been a member, participant of the Bonn Conference 7 years ago. It helped America and the rest of the world establish the Afghan interim government. It participated very, very well in the transformation of Afghanistan from the rule of Taliban to the present. It sees its interest in Afghanistan in terms of the stability of Afghanistan, the war on narcotics, the smuggling of drugs. It sees its interest in Afghanistan in being friendly in the to Iran and being friendly in the region. It sees an interest in Afghanistan in trying to fend off the possible dangers that it can have from the perception of relations that they have with the United States and the West. So Iran has been a contributor to the stability and peace and reconstruction of Afghanistan. Iran has been listening to Afghanistan as well with regard to relations with Iran and to relations in the region. And Iran has been naturally fearful as well of the consequences of the Western American stay in Afghanistan for them. Now, in this context, we have been very frank and blunt, I may say, with both America and Iran. We have told the Americans that Afghanistan should not be a place for rivalry between America and Iran. And we have said exactly the same thing to the Iranians, that Afghanistan should be kept away from their differences that they have. Rather, we have tried our best to work between the two countries to befriend them. We've had occasions of this having been seen as in good light. We've had occasions of this having been seen not so successful, but our effort is to continue to provide advice to both countries on improving relations. We find that very much in the interest of Afghanistan. We find that very much in the interest of Iran. We find that very much in the interest of America. So it's been a good relationship, a relationship that in which we've tried to keep a very delicate balance between the two countries. So far, we have succeeded in keeping that balance between the two countries. We like to continue there. And I liked President Obama's remarks on Iran and the desire to improve relations with Iran by Secretary Clinton. I would want to see the same reaction from our Iranian brothers, and we would very much like that.
Thank you. Let me open it up to you now. I'll take one more prerogative of the chair and call upon my colleague, Mike O'Hanlon, from the Brookings Institute, also to ask a question.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Mr. President, for being here and for what you've done for your country and for our partnership. In terms of the review that's now been completed, do you feel that the number of resources from the United States are going to be enough to begin to mitigate these problems with airstrikes and other kinds of civilian casualty issues that you've been so concerned about in your country? And if I could follow up, how long do you expect it will take until we see progress? This is a question on Americans' minds, on Afghans' minds. How long do you think before we see the strategy really begin to kick in and make progress on the ground?
Well, the Afghans, when the United States was leaving Helmand province and the southern parts of the country, they came to me in 2004 and said, well, ask the U.S. not to leave. But the U.S. did. And now we have the problem that we have there. The addition of resources to Afghanistan in the war on terrorism is a good change in the right direction, but it must be very carefully applied. Careful means we must make sure that it is interpreted in positive terms by our neighbors. I've had indications recently from Pakistani president they're worried about the addition of troops. And Pakistan is your ally. Therefore, the United States must go to Pakistan and explain this as a step that's in the right direction, that's going to produce the needed results in the war on terrorism. Second, for Afghanistan, it must provide better protection for Afghan civilians, better security for Afghan civilians. And in the direction of providing better security and better protection for the Afghan people, the Afghans will understand when there are difficulties arising as we move to strengthen our presence there. The number of years that it will require to succeed, the immediate impact in providing security, better security to the Afghan people will be sooner if we do it correctly. And that means a lot of detail that the defense people will have to work out. In the longer term, the war on terrorism will succeed only if it is also addressed in a political manner. It's not a military question alone. It's more a political question now. You'll have to have immense confidence given to Pakistan. That Pakistan will be a country that will be stable, that Pakistan's integrity is going to be respected that Afghanistan, as it moves forward in strength and in keeping its developing its forces and its economy, will be an asset to Pakistan as a friend and not in reverse reverse of that, in that Afghanistan will be a partner with Pakistan and in return, we must seek from Pakistan a very clear moving away from whatever linkages that there may be with radical forces or the use of radicalism. Unless we do that, we will continue to be bogged down, it will continue to suffer, and an improvement of relations between India and Pakistan will be another very positive addition to our quicker success. I was trying to be very careful, you know.
In the back, please, Gary.
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you, President Karzai. Gary Mitchell from the Mitchell Report. You used a very interesting phrase in your remarks, and I want to ask you about that. You said that we need to fight terrorism from a higher moral platform. I wondered if you could flesh that out for us a little bit and describe what that means to fight terrorism from a higher moral platform and whether that's directed at a specific audience.
I also said before that money won't buy you love and that force won't buy you obedience. Look, this is, well, clever. you caught the right thing. Sir, that's very remarkable. I'm grateful you're putting me back on this question. I'm a pacifist by nature. And I think every human being should be that. We must be seeking peace and peaceful means. Respect for life is, I believe, the best of the human nature. I was pained, like you wouldn't imagine, last year when I saw a clip on the CNN, a man throwing a two-year-old baby, I don't know if it was in California or somewhere, on a highway. Some of you must have seen that. It was last year. And subsequent to that, a man was interviewed who had seen that incident. And the pain that I saw on that man's face describing that scene and what he saw showed immense humanity in that man and the suffering that humans have for each other. When I say the higher platform of morality, it means to share the pain of others and to recognize it. That families are families and children are children, whether they're poor or rich. That the poor love their children as much as the rich love. And that has to be, that is what I mean by a moral platform, a higher moral platform. That we care for life. Now, I'm not going to go into more detail on this. A higher moral platform means that we must be conducting this war as better human beings.
I think we
are better than the guys that are fighting us. We must prove that we are better than the guys that are fighting us and that we have a higher moral standard.
I think you've made your point eloquently and diplomatically, Mr. President. Carol.
Carol Graham from Brookings. We've just finished a study of well-being and life satisfaction in Afghanistan, working with some colleagues in Kabul. And one of the things that we find, I think, that's quite remarkable is coexisting with low levels of trust in public institutions and low levels of trust in other citizens, the Afghans seem to have, by world standards, very high happiness levels, and a tremendous amount of hope for the future, and very strong preferences for political democracy.
Yes, that they do.
And so my question to you is, how can you see both the government, the Afghan community, supporting those positive sentiments, but also how can your allies, the strategy with the United States, how can we support those positive trends going forward?
You mean that you found the Afghans to be happier people with their lives than the richer countries or other countries?
Higher than the world average, on par with Latin Americans, who are generally much wealthier, but also much equally important, much more hopeful for the future. In other words, believing that poor people can get ahead and become wealthy.
The Bhutanese have a great attitude towards life. They don't call their economy in terms of the gross national product or gross national income. They call their life, their standard is called the gross national happiness. And that's wonderful. I asked the Prime Minister of Bhutan to give me what they have, and he sent me a book, and I went through it. Yes, the Afghans are happier generally with their life because of, where there is no terrorist, life is very good. They go to school, they have their farms. God gave us a lot of rain this year, and I hope he will continue to give us all that rain. But this is something that is easily damageable. And that's why the success that we are seeking in the fight against terrorism and the overall stability of the region is very, very important in order for it to sustain. A greater part of this overall happiness of our Afghans is also because of the taxpayers' money that he brought to Afghanistan. It's extremely important for the American taxpayer to know that the money that they sent has brought a lot of improvement to Afghan life. That's one side of it. The other side of it is that Afghans are a hearty people anyway. Any other nation gone through so much suffering would have been in an extremely difficult psychological environment today. But Afghans are still going on and sturdy, 30 years of war and destruction. So it's the nature of the people and the help of your taxpayers' money that has made us a happier lot. Continue it.
Thank you very much.
Please, in the back, the lady right there. Thank you.
Thank you, President Karzai. I'm Indira Lakshmanan from Bloomberg News, and we last met in Kabul when you were still head of the transitional administration. So
right.
Nice
Welcome
to see
up.
You again. I want to ask whether you feel you have the trust and support you need from the Obama administration and the U.S. Congress, and if not, what are you going to say this week to allay any doubts in Washington about your government's ability to fight terrorism and corruption and to effectively deliver services to the Afghan people?
Well, as I mentioned in my remarks, the past year and a half has seen, a difficult period in this relationship with regard to civilian casualties and other issues. But as I also said, the fundamentals are very, 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 very strong. And that's fundamental that's moving us towards the future with greater hope and greater assertiveness towards a better life, helped by America. The U.S. administration has been helping us and will continue to help us. Now we know what each side thinks about the issues that we have, and we have sorted some of them. I'll be sorting out the rest of it, I hope, in this trip with the U.S. administration. The Afghan government has a plan. The Afghan government has a plan for security in the country, for the fight against terrorism, the improvement of services, which is immensely better today as compared to the past. So that will not be the sticking issues between us. I think there are larger issues concerning the region concerning the overall impact of what we're trying to produce together in the region and the fight against terrorism. That will be the main issues. And, of course, I will have to convey to the American administration, I will have to bring to them that they are trusted in Afghanistan and that they also surely do trust the Afghan people as we move forward. So trust is there. It has to be washed a little.
One last question. Yes, right here.
Hi, my name is Nicole Norath, and I'm from the Gallup poll. And we have conducted two surveys in Afghanistan, most recently in December. And in fact, we're going back into the field this month. But in the last survey in December, we asked all Afghans if they felt that the Taliban had a positive influence on the city or area where they live. And only 10% said yes. And in my estimation, in my opinion, I think that's very low support.
For the Taliban.
Right. If they think that question was, do you think that they have a positive influence in the city or area where you live or not? 10% said yes. So my question is, why is it then that I feel like there's a rise in the Taliban and they become stronger recently when they really don't have a lot of support in Afghanistan?
Very important question. Well, ma'am, can I go to the question of sanctuaries?
It's your forum, President.
All right. The war on terrorism, the Taliban, the violence. Ambassador Holbrooke had the best remarks that I've ever heard from a U.S. official. He said, no matter how economically powerful Afghanistan is or becomes, no matter how effective a government Afghanistan has, no matter how powerful an army and the security institutions Afghanistan has, unless the sanctuaries in our neighbors, the training grounds in our neighbors go away, Afghanistan will not be stable or peaceful. The return of the Taliban is because we did not address the question of sanctuaries in time. Unfortunately, today Pakistan is suffering with us massively in a consequence of that. And tomorrow, we'll have an occasion between us, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and America, to discuss this very question that you raised in depth and try to find answers for that. And Afghanistan will do all that it can in immense friendship and brotherhood with Pakistan and alliance and friendship with America to address it.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think you ended for us on a note. We'll all want to know what the answer is tomorrow. If I could ask you all to please stay in your seats. The Secret Service would ask you to stay in this room while the President and his party departs. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Very nice. Thank you.